Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Forever Photos by Andre Ballo at andresphotos.com. That's E-N-D-R-E-S, photos.com. Tonight's guest is Dr. Karen Good, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-627-6008, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Well, Fran, and as you mentioned, the guest tonight, we're used to interviewing a lot of people that talk about ghosts and apparitions, but from an investigative type of perspective. And Dr. Karen Good is a psychotherapist, and she works with children who see ghosts, and that's going to be a very interesting talk, because as we know, there seems to be more and more children that have intuitive abilities, but we'll get into that in a little bit.
Okay, we'll get into that in a little bit.
I wanted to mention that the newsletters are out. If you haven't gotten one, you'll get one this week. Or if you go to there's an article in the newsletter about a survey that we're doing, or if you go to the front page of our website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org, you'll see a link to a survey. And it's an after-death communication survey that we put together. And so far, in just a couple of days, we've gotten, hundreds?
A few hundred
responses already. So we'll have some good data, and we'll report back both in the newsletter and on the website about the results. Just took a quick peek, and it's pretty interesting, looking at the consensus. So stay tuned for that. So you've got an article on your desk that shows me a planet and a moon. So I have a story.
A planet orbiting a sun-like star. The star has a name, HD 85512.
Oh, how warm.
It's like, in some cities where they don't want to bother naming the streets and they just give them numbers.
Right.
You know, like Florida. Anyway, it's in the southern constellation of Vela, V-E-L-A, which means the snail. And the scientists have decided that this planet, finally they found a planet that can support life. But the key here, you got to understand, our scientists, American scientists in particular, have been looking for life on other planets. I don't know why, but that's their motivation, is to find life on other planets. They're using the criteria of what we need, the elements we need to survive as beings that we are. And what intrigued me the most about this article is that this is the first time they're actually saying it's able to support Earth-like life, as opposed to, it can support life, it can't support life, the criteria being water.
Yeah, I took a quick peek, and and they did mention something to the fact that the gravity they estimated would be different, so that the beings on this planet would have to be shorter,
They come to these conclusions.
Yeah.
You know.
Well,
they're also assuming gravity is a real thing when gravity in itself is a theory.
Yeah, when we talk about life on other planets, I think that there's life. It may not be life as we know it, but there has to be life in the millions and millions of stars and galaxies out there. I mean, there had to be there for some sort of purpose. You know, it can't be just for show. You know, so and what kind of a show is it when we can't see him anyways? But you know, we make a mistake, I think, when we talk about life. I mean, if we are, as we often discuss, if we're these spiritual beings that have this physical body, you know, as a shell, why do we assume that life on other planets would use the same kind of shell as what we have here? I mean, it could be if we're essentially beings of thought, of consciousness, you know, or of mind, you know, life could mean, you know, could appear as anything, you know.
Anything. I mean, doesn't a tree, a leaf, have consciousness?
Yeah, but even if we were talking about people, we think of a human being as, you know, having a certain stature and a certain number of limbs and two eyes and so forth, but wouldn't it be something when we go there and the beings look after, they have the same kind of mind that we do, but their appearance is just something that we can't conceive of.
Well, you know, this kind of talk always makes me flash back to an old Twilight Zone where these two astronauts land on a planet and there turns out to be life there, but they don't realize that it's so tiny they can't see it until they start stepping on it and the people of the planet start rebelling. So that's what all of this talk makes me think of. It's like Rod Serling knew to make fun of the scientists that were looking for life that looked like you and I, and here are these big astronauts literally crushing the people on the planet they went to visit because they expected them to be like you and I.
Expectations are can be very problematic, especially when you're stepping on other people. But again, I mean, you know, reality is so different to different people. I mean, you hear all the stories when you know, Columbus ships were on the horizon. You know, all the
sailed off the end of the earth.
Because in their frame of reference, the ship didn't exist, so they just couldn't recognize it. You know, and we can't recognize probably the millions of different life forms, you know, that are out there. You know, maybe life that inhabits other planets are just planets of points of light. You know,
right? But it's shame on the scientists after reflecting back of what Columbus went through, sailing off the end of the earth, that he really didn't sail off the end of the earth. Wouldn't you then say, you know, we have to be a little more open-minded about stuff, and then there they go again drawing conclusions based on what they believe that they know.
Yeah. Well, science, you know, for many, many years was based upon only what can be perceived, you know, with the senses, you know, and then, you know, quantum physics came about, which threw everybody for a loop because it's all based on theory. Nobody quite knows, you know, what it is.
But it seems to go along with what we can't see, right? That's the whole key. And yet we have thousands, millions of people that we know of that are having experiences, direct personal experiences, with things you cannot see.
Right. And that's what we're always talking about, these unseen worlds. So let's go to our break. When we come back, we will have our guest, Dr. Karen Good. We'll be talking about children and ghosts and intuitive abilities and all sorts of good stuff. So stay with us, and we'll be right back.
The Forever Family Foundation will be hosting its much-sought-after annual fundraising event, Night of Mediums, on 11-11-11 at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in New York at 7 p.m. Enjoy a scrumptious dinner while seated at a table of only 12 people as a Foundation-certified medium joins you following dessert to conduct spirit communication for your table only. It's a terrific opportunity to not only get readings in an intimate setting, but to enjoy a good meal and help the Foundation at the same time. For reservations and information, call 631-425-7707. Again, that's 631-425-7707. Or visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
If you grieve the loss of a loved one, a Forever Photo may truly help to bring you solace. With a Forever Photo, renowned graphic artist Andre Balog will create a personalized rendering of your dear one in spirit, thereby turning it into a constant source of comfort to you. All you need to do is send a high-quality photo, and Andre will do the rest. To get further information and see examples of these beautiful artworks, email Andre at andresphoto.com or call him 323-667-0309. That's E-N-D-R-E at E-N-D-R-E-S-P-H-O-T-O-S.com.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Karen Good. Our sponsor is Forever Photos by Andre Balog. That's Forever Photos by Andre Balog at andresphotos.com, E-N-D-R-E-S-photos.com. Bob?
And Dr. Karen Good is a psychotherapist, an inspirational speaker, and spiritual coach. And she's a well-respected leader in the parent coaching industry. She's the founder of the Academy for Coaching Parents International, and her work has been featured in hundreds of publications, as well as local and national radio programming. She holds the titles of Diplomat of the American Psychotherapy Association and National Certified Counselor. She's authored a dozen books, her most recent being Kids Who See Ghosts, How to Guide Them Through Fear. Welcome, Dr. Good.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You know, I know that you've worked extensively with children in your professional practice. I also know that some of your previous books have dealt with, you know, coping with stress and trauma. So what inspired you to write a book about kids and ghosts?
Well, I had several experiences of my own over the last couple of years, and I also happen to notice changes in children. I was getting an increase in questions from parents. And after the book, Raising Intuitive Children, was published in 2009, I was very new at blogging and Facebook. So I started out with a discussion of psychic children who see ghosts because it happened to coincide with the television show starting. So I think a viral network kicked in. The blog had several hundred and eventually thousands of questions from parents on my child sees a ghost. Are they nuts? What should I do? That's what started this whole process. And after a year of steadfastly answering questions, you know, I just decided it was easier to put it in a book. But actually, it would have been easier on the blog. There was a lot of interviewing to be done for this book and a lot of terminology to use that I hope was acceptable to the more mainstream mind.
Mm. And I know you mentioned you were getting an increase in the number of inquiries. I mean, would you say from what you've your research and what you've experienced that the number of children who report seeing ghosts and the number of children who have intuitive abilities seems to be growing as opposed to past years?
I do think it's growing, and that was the opinion of those that I interviewed. And I did speak with individuals, psychotherapists and counselors in schools, who also thought that it was increasing, though, you know, they are not in the book, and their names are not to be used because they're still in very professional settings. But it did seem to be a general agreement.
Mm. It's interesting that, you know, even the people that are in professional settings, you know, why that there still is this taboo, you know, it would affect, you know, funding and research and their standing. And I wonder if that'll change someday, you know. There's so many people that seem to be in the closet when discussing unseen worlds and intuitive abilities. Don't you find that?
Yeah, I do. I do. Mm. You know, I've even been asked, you know, well, why would you stick your neck out? And it's like, well, you know, my neck's always been out there, so to me it's not new. But it's also, I believe, refreshing for parents to be able to see a therapist and, you know, understand that there's a difference between, you know, seeing a ghost and stress-induced symptoms and somebody who might have a psychosis. You know, I mean, there are lines of differentiation. But then what, you know, what do you do when therapists call you and say, well, my son sees a ghost, so let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Because nobody else will. Mm. So in that way, you know, one by one.
Yeah. I know that you mentioned, obviously, that there's a difference. There are some children that have intuitive abilities and see, you know, ghosts and apparitions, and there are some, as you just mentioned, that might have some sort of a psychosis or a mental or physical ailment. So what does a parent do? I mean, how does a parent differentiate or decide whether the child, you know, needs help or whether it's real or not real? Or you know, what advice would you give to a parent?
Well, I think the advice I would give a parent, Bob, depends upon the age of the child.
Yeah.
Some of the younger children who, you know, quite literally do have imaginary friends, and then others who are on their way down the hall to their bed at night and they stop cold and turn white, you know, because they're pointing at something, you know, to me, that's obvious that something's going on.
Yeah.
But the older the children get, we look for consistency. And we look for, that is, consistency in their conversation, consistency perhaps even in their withdrawal and not wanting to talk about it. But their behavior is fairly normal. They know the difference between, you know, fantasy and the real world, but the veils are thin for them. And they do sometimes see something. So the first thing we rule out are inconsistent behaviors and things that seem odd about the child's personality, which the parents will know. Mm. The second thing we rule out are recent stressors. One young woman was 16 who suddenly started seeing her grandfather. And, you know, yes, her grandmother died and then her grandfather died. And she didn't want to see them and it frightened her. So we taught her focusing and meditation techniques, and she basically turned it off.
Mm.
So stressors, I believe, do contribute to the family environment. So we look at the family environment and see what's going on there.
Mm.
And then there are the children that seem to have the gift, and it's normal for them. In my world, those that I interviewed, they tend to think it runs in families.
Yeah, so do you, and that's something that we find a lot, you know, that especially in working with mediums that very often, most of the time, they have other members of the family that have the same kind of abilities. So that it seems.
Well, that's nice to have that verified. Good.
Yeah, it seems like some sort of a genetic link that maybe we'll discover someday. But when we talk about what I'd like to ask you, people come to you, let's say a parent comes, the child is seeing ghosts, I'm sure very often the parent doesn't believe in such things. So they come to you, and they might expect you to, for lack of a better term, you know, back them up, you know, and instead, you know, you might interview the child and determine that there really is something going on. So do you ever have that? It must be very hard in your professional practice as a psychotherapist, and sometimes saying things that the parents don't want to hear. Is that true?
Well, I think I can think of one situation where the parent was very adamant that it was a medical condition. And so she really needed to go see a medical doctor. But in general, you know, I'm okay with a parent not believing in ghosts. That's their right. That's their value. But we do work on how to communicate. We do work on being interested and asking questions about what's going on with your child. You know, I would want to know what's going on inside my child. I want to know what their dreams are and what they're thinking. And if they have imaginary friends, I'd like to hear those conversations. Maybe I'm obviously programmed as a therapist to do that. But that's the way that I work with parents, is to help them understand. We use our intuition to attune to each other and get centered, so there's not a lot of emotional aggravation or stress. And when it's calm and we can talk, then it's more about communication and getting the family to understand each other's personal styles, how they interact with the world, what their expectations are of each other, and how to change those if it's not working.
Yeah.
So to me, I like to focus on how do we make this work.
So when children come to you and they are very fearful about having, you know, intuitive abilities, is it often the case that they feel that way because their parents are fearful of things, like things they can't understand or see? Do the children pick up on that?
I do believe that. I believe it starts in utero, and I believe that in my observation and my work with families, I believe children run the energy of the parents, or the energy of the household, if you will.
Mm.
Stress, negativity, positivity, ups and downs, uncertainties, anxieties. I think the kids act them out. And if you have a particular child with strong intuitive intelligence, their primary mode of learning, their way of interacting with the world, is through feeling. So if you're a visual person and you want to talk about what you think, I'm a child and I can only tell you what I feel. So you have to tune into my feelings if you want to know what's going on with me.
Mm.
Make sense?
Yeah. You know, as you're talking, I was thinking, and Fran, she'll probably laugh when I tell you this, but I remember her telling me that when she was a child, her dream was to grow up and be an astronaut. And she told her mother, she got up the nerve, she told her mother she wants to be an astronaut, and her mother said, "You can't be an astronaut." And she said, "Why?" And her mother said, "Because you're afraid of the dark." When, in fact, Fran wasn't afraid of the dark. Her mother was afraid of the dark. So, I mean, you know, it's probably a similar situation when the parent is fearful of intuitive abilities, and the child is just telling them, you know, what they see and what they feel.
Well, exactly, and I think that story illustrates part of the whole issue that's happening with parents of kids who do see ghosts. If we agree that there's some sort of family line, if you will, and we had to shut ours down in our generation, but our kids are causing us as parents to wake back up. And boy, not only are we dealing with my kid, but now I'm dealing with that too in me.
Yeah.
Very scary.
Yeah. So when you're listening to a child recount some of their experiences, and they talk about seeing a ghost. Is that how they describe it? Do they use the word ghost, you know, or do they simply state what they've observed?
It varies. Yeah. Sometimes they just say they feel something ugly. Mm. I remember a child once who recently divorced, and the mother, very kind woman, really looking to help him and try and figure out what to do. But he was 8 years old. They moved into a new apartment, and he would not sleep in the bedroom whose wall was next to the apartment next to them. Mm. And he'd tell me that that woman over there, that was his term, that woman who lives there, that woman over there is depressed. And it comes through my wall at night. And when I go to sleep, there's somebody in my room. And he would not go in the room. They did everything they could possibly imagine, including the grandfather coming in and helping him clear the house and sleeping with him in the den. And finally, one day, you know, I just asked him on the phone. I said, "How are you feeling about all this?" And he said to me quite plainly, "I'm sick, and I need help." His body was getting sick. His gut was getting constricted, you know, like a spastic colon.
Yeah.
So I think they moved to another place. I'm not sure. But it can be feelings. It can be shadows. I get a lot of shadows. It can be a face, and they can describe the face as pleasant or not pleasant. Sometimes it's light bodies. They don't say light bodies. They might say, something's light over there, something's bright over there. So it varies from what I understand.
Yeah, and we are talking with Dr. Karen Good, author of Kids Who See Ghosts, and the number here is 1-888-627-6008. If a child reports seeing an entity, a discarded, you know, entity, or has some other, you know, intuitive experience, is it a mistake for the parent to automatically assume that their child is psychic?
I think so, in the beginning. You know, just like it would be a mistake to say you're imagining it, I think it's just as much a mistake to say, "Oh my gosh, you must be psychic," like that kid on TV.
Yeah.
You know, to me, We listen. I really encourage parents to try not to say anything, but to just listen and just make very neutral statements like, "Tell me more. You know, can you describe? You know, what are you feeling? What are you seeing?" In other words, all the sensory impressions, all the intuitive impressions. You know, where is it in your body? What does your gut have to say about it? Hmm. And eventually, you know, when that's open and there's clarity about what it might be, then you can discuss it further, or you can express it, or draw it, or talk about it. But I don't like seeing parents jump in to do any conclusions with their kids until we know what they're talking about. It's kind of like a teacher in the classroom, you know, with one of my special ed students who would say, "That kid just screams." And it's like, well, you know, is he screaming under his breath? Is he screaming at you, the teacher? Is he being teased? Tell me specifically what's going on. Don't give me a generality, and don't make any about your kids yet.
You know, we hear so many reports over the years from parents who tell us that their extremely young children are able to, they'll look at photographs that they had never seen before, and they'll just point and they say, "Oh, that's, you know, that's Grandpa," you know, and then look, or maybe look at another photo and say, "Oh, that's Grandpa's car," or things of that nature. And the parents are usually astounded, you know, by it. Is that something that you have come across a lot as well?
That is something I come across. And I wouldn't say it's really common, but where it's really true, it's almost like, well, mostly sometimes for moms or who've lost their dad and, you know, maybe over recently, they're really touched. But there was one case where a child was reporting seeing his daddy, and he didn't know how to say granddad, but it was his daddy's daddy, and they looked kind of alike.
Yeah.
And they pulled out a picture of him just to double check, because I think that his dad was kind of sensitive too, and kind of got on the boat, but you know, they didn't jump to any conclusions. They kind of had the feeling, and they went and did the pictures and just laid it out, you know, nonchalantly. They handled it really well. And you know, of course, the child says, "Oh, that's Daddy."
Yeah.
Oh, that was a fun story.
Right. Well, there's also, I've seen cases in you know, reincarnation research, you know, where child has pointed. I think Dr. Tucko has some research on that, where he investigated a family where the child looked at a picture of a car, and the parents said, "Oh, that's Grandpa's car," and he said, "No, that's my car. You know, that was my car." So, I mean, there are all sorts of things that make you believe that we're a lot more than our physical bodies. You know, in the book, you mentioned the importance of children who see ghosts or intuitive children having a mentor. So, you know, explain that a little bit. What kind of a mentor would that be?
Well, I have mentored, or at least emailed, I don't know if it's mentoring long term, teenage girls, 12, 13, 14 years old. Some of them see ghosts, some of them want to see spirits, some of them want to go to school and be like the woman on TV, you know, who works with ghosts. So to me, it's someone, maybe even outside of the family, who can talk to the child and listen to what he has to say and be that objective observer or that objective listener that gives positive regard and, you know, doesn't say anything, doesn't verify, just listens. I've served in that capacity for the children of some of my friends, and they in turn, you know, have listened to my daughter. But I feel it's important for a child to have someone to listen to them. So sometimes I serve that role on the phone. One time a young girl from Colorado called, sweet, beautiful girl, and in her world, she picks up ghosts everywhere, and she takes them home, and she takes care of them because they hurt. And sometimes she shares it with her friends, and sometimes she doesn't. And one Saturday morning, we just had a long talk. You know, shall I tell my friends? Shall I not? Shall I tell them? Shall I not? You know, and I don't give her advice. It's like, well, whatever you decide, let me know. So, you know, it just helped her mom out and her dad for the child to have some other adult listen to her. And it probably lasted 3 Saturdays. And, you know, then she was comfortable with her decision and went on. And now and then I'll get a Facebook hi, you know.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by mentoring. I mean a good listener and somebody whose presence is calm and accepting.
Mm. Have you also come across parents who try to push their intuitive kids to, you know, perform, so to speak, you know, try to make it happen at will, you know, at gatherings?
I definitely have.
Yeah, I can imagine. Not much different from the TV shows you see about with the modeling, right?
know, That's true. That's true.
I know lots of times schools get involved. I guess there are incidents at schools, and then I would imagine that school personnel are not always open to the possibility of some of the things that we're talking about. So, I mean, do you find that sometimes, you know, it's the school personnel or administrator or counselor that sort of push the parents to go seek medical help for the child?
I've seen it both ways.
Yeah.
I've seen a school counselor who was sympathetic to the intuitive child. My guess was probably from her personal experiences.
Yeah.
And assured the mom, you know, that she would keep an eye on the kid in school. I've had another case where the family did not prepare the child or the teacher, had no discussion about it because they were afraid. And in the middle of the classroom, you know, the child screams out, "Leave me alone and quit talking to me." And, of course, you know, you don't hear voices in a classroom without getting sent to a medical facility.
Yeah.
And when it happens in the public school, they have to do that. That's maybe the law, I don't know, but just common morality would get the child medical help to see what's going on.
Yeah.
But in the parent's home, you know, the child talks to people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So Why was it loud in school? She probably had a sensory overload issue. You know, there could be aspects of anxiety that go along with it. But in that case, you know, no, they were not receptive to it, and they handled it appropriately as they needed to.
Mm.
So, I, you know, there's people in every organization that I've ever worked with who understands. You know, if you think about four personality types, just very general, okay? Four temperaments. And if every fourth person is a strong intuitive intelligence as opposed to a visual learner or an auditory learner or an experiential learner, you know, at least another fourth of that fourth are going to be highly sensitive people who have these experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Just like on the other end of the scale, you know, there would be the musical genius, right?
Yeah.
So on the psychic end, to me, we're a lot more common than we know.
Well, that makes perfect sense to me. We're going to go to a commercial break stay with us. When we come back, we'll hear more about the unseen world and children and ghosts from our guest, Dr. Karen Good. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few moments.
Is there chocolate in the afterlife? Don't miss the 5th Annual Forever Family Foundations Conference on Saturday, November 12th at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in New York. This all-day conference features presentations by medical doctor Lee Bounum, offering scientific evidence of an afterlife, and paranormal evidence by noted parapsychologist Lloyd Auerbach. A full sit-down luncheon will be highlighted by a formal chocolate tasting, and guests will be treated to two sessions of spirit communication conducted by certified mediums Angelina Diana and Teresa Caputo. Call 631-425-7707. Again, that's 631-425-7707, or visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
If you grieve the loss of a loved one, a forever photo may truly help to bring you solace. With a forever photo, renowned graphic artist Andre Balog will create a personalized rendering of your dear one in spirit, thereby turning it into a constant source of comfort to you. All you need to do is send a high-quality photo, and Andre will do the rest. To get further information and see examples of these beautiful artworks, email Andre at andresphoto.com or call him 323-667-0309. That's E-N-D-R-E at E-N-D-R-E-S-P-H-O-T-O-S.com.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Karen Good. This show is sponsored by Forever Photos by Andre Ballo and can be found on the web at andresphotos.com. That's andresphotos.com. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7777. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. Some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show, they want to see it continue, they love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com. But first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website. And again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find your items, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. And for all you QVC shoppers, they are making a generous 2% of your purchase donation to the foundation this week. So if you're on there, QVC shopping, remember to go through iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as your charity of choice. Our Holidays Past raffle with five chances to win a one-hour medium reading is up there. There are very few participants in it so far, so your chances of winning are extremely good. There will be five winners, each getting a one-hour phone reading with one of our certified mediums. It's $5 a chance, five chances for $20, and it goes on from there. Visit our website again, www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org, for more information on entering the raffle, or you could just mail in your check to Forever Family Foundation, 222 Atlantic Avenue, Oceanside, New York, 11572. Our annual conference, Is There Chocolate in the Afterlife?, with feature Friday night fundraiser, Night of Mediums, is set for November 11th at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in Hophog, New York. This is a limited seating conference and fundraiser, so book early to avoid disappointment. Right now we only have one table left at the Friday night fundraiser and several rows left at the Saturday conference. Our Holidays Past, an evening of spirit communication conducted by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, is now in four locations so far this December. On December 3rd, Joanne Gerber will be in Bethel, Connecticut. Also on December 3rd, Janet Nohavik will be in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey. December 10th, we have Angelina Diana will be in Natick, Massachusetts with afterlife advocate Dave Kane. And December 17th, Teresa Caputo will be in Melville, New York. It's $25 a seat for members, $35 for non-members. Reserve now. These seats fill quickly, particularly one with Teresa Caputo, who has just gotten her own TV show. Bob?
And we're back with Dr. Karen Good. I know we've been a little negligent, and we had some people that wanted to talk to Dr. Good. Do you mind taking a phone call?
No, I don't.
Okay.
We have Linda online, too.
Okay. Hello, Linda. Linda, you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on with Dr. Good. Did you have a question for her?
Yes, I do. Dr. Good, I had an imaginary friend when I was a child, and my parents were very put off by it. I also had a babysitter who was very afraid of it, so they really put the fear of God in me as a kid. But this imaginary friend was quite vivid to me, and I spoke with him a lot, but after being jumped once or twice, I told him I couldn't see him anymore, couldn't talk to him anymore, but we had quite a few adventures together. And my question to you tonight, although I'm still intuitive, I'm a mature woman, and I still have psychic experiences and so forth, but I'm wondering what your thoughts are on trying to connect again with the personality or identity of the entity who was my friend.
I would respond from my gut level feeling to use your intuition in meditation or connection to connect to somebody that's present in your life at this time, and to ask if it is that energy, how and what. Because there are times I have seen adults reconnect with an imaginary friend, and it was an aspect of their safety. You know, the friend was there to keep them safe. The friend was there to protect them from an alcoholic, situation. So whatever, the question is whether you need that friend and if that friend still serves you. And if not, I mean, there's no harm in asking to connect. But because you are an adult and you have the intuition and the experiences, also see who's there now. See if there's a presence that is supportive and positive and helpful to you now, like that one was. My sense is you want the feeling of it, and you want the connection, maybe not so much the same being.
Right. Maybe the vivid clarity of it, I guess. It was
so
very
but even in
clear,
asking, you get clear, and so that's why it's good that you ask. Is it should I or shouldn't I? You know, there isn't any should about it. It's do you want to, and do you feel safe enough doing it? Or do you need to go? Do you need to go back there and do it, or can you just be present with the energies around you now, and see who's here to support you?
Okay. Thank you very much. You're very helpful, and I really am enjoying hearing you tonight.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you for calling, Linda. Have a good evening.
You too, Bob. Bye.
Bye-bye. Do you find, Dr. Good, that children's psychic abilities often, you know, wane as they, you know, reach maturity or get older? Is it more prevalent when they're in the younger ages?
It is more prevalent in the younger ages, well, in most all children, because of the adaptation of their brain over those first 6 years of life to developing. The brain, their synaptic and neuronal structures are actually much thicker and richer than an adult brain, because at age 6 or 7, that brain washes itself, right? Mm. And so that's at the age when you can really tell that if they are going to continue to see spirits, it will be at that time, or it will open up again in pubescence. But I have known men and women who shut it down due to circumstances of family and life, but it never goes away because it's an innate part, so it does open back up.
Yeah, I guess our last call was an example of that, you know, as she...
Yeah.
Parents put the fear of God in her, you know, because she evidently suppressed those feelings, which is unfortunate, you know. And maybe with books, such as the one that you wrote and the work that you do, parents will open up a little bit more to the possibility and embrace it rather than shut it down.
That would be nice.
Yeah. There's also a school of thought that if a child suffers a trauma or has a serious illness, that is often a trigger to developing intuitive abilities. You ever find that in your work?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
There is a lot, I believe, of dissociation in the world, and the more sensitive the child, probably the more easily the child can withdraw into himself or herself and you know, enter a fantasy world, and trauma and stress, of course, trigger the adrenals, and the adrenals can trigger the temporal lobe. So the mechanisms of the brain are known now for stress, and it's still real, and it's an experience of the child. So that's one of those things we were discussing earlier about consistency in a child and what the behavior looks like.
Yeah.
So.
Well, one of the good pieces of advice that you give in the book to parents is that if they don't know anything about what their child is going through, that they should educate themselves, you know, about psychic phenomena. I mean, they can read books, you know, they could listen to interviews, they can, you know, talk to other people. So I guess that's very important, you know, because what happens really to a child when they're dismissed by, you know, by a parent? I guess it has some lasting effects on the child's development.
Well, I like the way that Joseph Chilton Pierce describes it in some of his early works about what children model in parenting, that children come to parents just like a puppy comes to its mother for attention and for affirmation and for connection. So if the child doesn't connect and they're always dismissed, or that particular topic is then associated with dismissal, sure, you tend not to value that topic. It goes away. It you know, sinks deep into the subconscious somewhere, and maybe it wakes up later. But it's exactly right. If you don't nurture it, you don't sustain it.
Mm. One of the contributors in your book made a statement to the effect that with ghosts, he thought that it was more of a situation where there were ghosts wandering instead of ghosts wandering into the kid's realm, that the kid was wandering into the ghost realm. You know, what do you think he was talking about? Do you think he was talking about children whose minds travel to other dimensions?
Well, I'll give you my take on that based upon my understanding. I think that was from Sonia Choquette. And we were discussing these young girls who see shadows, but they don't want to talk to anything. And some of them are depressed. And in her worldview, the etheric energy body becomes very holy or ragged, if you will. And so the boundaries, the energy boundaries of pubescent girls, that this was the topic of that conversation, you know, can easily wander into their realms. You know, they look up one day and there's somebody in front of them. You know, is it that the ghost is passing through their room? Or is it that the child is in a very distant state of awareness and really wide open energetically, and there they are?
And
that's a valid point, because I can remember in my own days when I was awakening and opening out of an out-of-body experience, you know, I felt like I was the ocean, and the ocean flowed through me, and I flowed through the ocean. I had no boundaries at all. And, you know, I think it's that kind of energy-body connection that brings awareness to the physical senses. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it does, and it makes a lot of sense when you think that if we live in, you know, there aren't separate worlds. There's one world. There's a life continuum, and there are no boundaries. So who's to say who's entering, you know, it's not that you're entering another dimension. It's just all the same, you know. So
exactly, and I think the point of that conversation with her was like somebody who has difficulty dealing with a, you know, an issue of their personality or a relationship, and it, you know, rather than deal with it here, it's a lot easier to go find out what caused it in a past life somewhere.
Right.
You know, it's easier to deal with it there.
Yeah.
So her point was, if you ask the child or the young person, you know, well, what if, you know, you wandered into their space? You know, what if that's their space and you're sharing it with them? And that opens up this conversation that's completely different and very obviously much less self-possessed, you know, in the young teen years. And the mind can be really focused on me. The world is about me.
Right.
So it opens it up to the idea of conversation, communication, boundaries. Then it opens the door to be able to help them.
Right. Well, this hour has flown by way too fast. We are talking with Dr. Karen Good. The book is called Kids Who See Ghosts, How to Guide Them Through Fear. You can find out a lot more about the book and Dr. Good's work by visiting the website kidswhoseeghosts.com. There are also, as Dr. Good mentioned, she had some other best-selling books, including Raising Intuitive Children. We do have links, Amazon links, to those books on the Forever Family Foundation website, so you could check those out. I know you have maintained some other websites. Are they listed on the Kids Who See Ghosts site, Dr. Good?
I believe there are links, yes. For example, the link to raisingintuitivechildren.com. That blog particularly has a lot of great information for parents who want to see what other parents' stories were and how the communication, you know, went back and forth and assisting each other. That particular blog has a lot of good information, as does the kidswhoseeghosts.com blog.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I know you've been of great help to a lot of our listeners, wonderful information, and I hope you'll come back and join us again real soon.
I would love to. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Vicki Steffi, Judith Lockman, Wendy Lippo, Kathy Ward, Nick Hargraves, Michael Tim, and anyone being affected by all of these Mother Nature happenings. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was by Masuro Omoto back on May 9th, 2010, when we had the BP Gulf tragedy. And now it's time to say...
Our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.